Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Sitting in my class, just drifting away.
All right, Shanice.
We're just gonna leave it right. I thought that would be very good to start off just this HBCU episode, because this special bonus episode of Getting Grown is presented commercial free thanks to Target. Target is partnering with HBCUs to support the next generation of Black talent.
Sure, so you're right.
With that being said, I just wanted to give you them two lines because this is about school. Sitting in my class, just drifting away. I'd rather get to the guest because it's a phenomenal conversation.
Oh, so
good. Shall we head that way, sis?
Let's do it. Everybody, we're excited. Welcome back to another ad-free episode of Getting Grown. We're excited. We've got some bonus content brought to you especially from our good friends at the Black Beyond Measure campaign at Target. We are still digging into, illuminating, unpacking, exploring the HBCU experience. And today we get to have an experience. We get to engage someone who's an actual alum of an HBCU and gain her experience and insights and what her experience of historically Black college, her particular university, which I think was FAMU, right?
All right, all right, all right.
All right, all right, all right. Yes. So we're going to welcome Whitney to the kitchen table. Welcome, welcome, yay! Welcome, Whitney. We just love to have you here. We are great to see your face in the place.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. So yes, we want to learn more about you and about your journey through the FAMU and how that has shaped you into the wonderful human being that you are. But before we get into all of that, how are you doing? How
are you? I am thriving today. Today is a thriving day.
Yes.
It's a thriving day. So I have to sit in that too. It's easy to complain, and I have done my fair share of complaining, and it has been a rough ride. But today is a good day. It was a very good day.
Now, do we know each other well? Because your face looks so familiar.
Ooh, man. You know, sometimes I see you in passing, but every now and then I'm like, I think I know this girl. I don't know her name.
Same.
I'm just excited to be able to actually place a name and a face together right now.
What's your name again?
Lying on the internet.
Don't do names, Jay. Let's not do names, boo. Oh, okay, right. That's right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I just want to let you all know that a good chunk of my core tribe is right here on this recording between Dr. Kia and Whitney. I speak to them both on a weekly basis. So
absolutely.
I'm very excited to have you in this capacity. We are very excited to have you here at the kitchen table.
Are. Yes, we are.
So much.
I think we shall waste no more time, actually. Well, Kia, how are you, sister? How are you doing today?
You know, I am going to try to. I'm aspiring to thrive right now.
Thriving aspirations.
I have aspirations to thrive. But, you know, I'm safe. I have what I need. I haven't any complaints. You know, we're dealing with what we're dealing with, but we're doing it.
And
we're all good. You're doing okay? Everything
I am. Everything's good. I went and got my claws done today. You
very
know,
nice.
It's been a good day. It's been a fiery day. I'm enjoying it. And so, but I'm super excited to get to this.
Abounding.
All right, what are the Migos going to say? Woo, 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 woo. But
all over the internet. All over the internet.
What's somebody say? Blue Ivy's internet at that.
Blue Ivy's internet. But you know what we're doing? We're sitting on Blue Ivy's internet right now. We're going to turn this into a positive direction. Yes, we are so excited to have Whitney here to share her very unique and personal experience around being at FAMU, being an alum of FAMU, but also how that kind of impacted you in your personal life. So before we get into it, I want you to tell the people, tell them where you're from and tell them where you at.
Hey, where I'm at physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally.
Physically, bitch. We don't need all the business.
You're a counselor. I can go deep real quick.
How much time you got?
You feel me? I'm still trying I am a first generation American, born and raised in New York, to a Trinidadian family. I can't even say parents because my whole family was elbow deep in my experience. And I am a physical nomad. Mm-hmm. I've never been in one place for too long, thanks to my kooky mother. And I am currently residing in country number 6, I think. I'm pretty sure 6 or 7, which is the Netherlands. I live in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. It is the Brooklyn to Amsterdam's Manhattan, if you will.
Really?
Yes. AKA what Jade and I like to call the white motherland.
Yeah, hey. She live in the white motherland.
Wow.
That's why I be checking in on her. I'm like, okay, so you know, how are you doing? Whitney actually lived a true life, 90-day fiance, it's the other way experience. You know what I'm saying? She moved to Rotterdam. Okay. You know, for stuff. But we're gonna talk about her journey more because I think that your experience at FAMU probably helped with. Kind of that whole trajectory.
FAMU owes me nothing. They owe me nothing.
So let's get into that a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does Whitney, born and raised in New York, end up at FAMU?
At the highest of Seven Hills. Well, let me tell you something. It was a struggle because, and I think we're going to get into this a little bit later in the conversation. My mother was absolutely against me going to FAMU. My cousin Alyssa went to FAM and I went to visit her for Thanksgiving. And when I tell you, there are a few, like a handful of instances where I felt something pass through my body that was like, this is it. And it was one, my trip to Ghana, hands down, changed my life. And my visit to her during Thanksgiving at FAMU on campus, it literally, I remember a physical feeling like, this is it, this is what I need. And when I said that, I think I was like 14 or 15, my mom moved me to my fourth high school in 4 years, at the International School of Port of Spain in Trinidad. So I was like a local kid at the international school. It was interesting. Mm-hmm. And I told her I wanted to go to FAM, and I remember her saying, you're not going to school with all those Black people. Mm-hmm. And I was deeply confused, like, again, like, wait, what? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I also kind of was, I wasn't shocked by it, right? So I ended up enrolling in a PWI. I went to Pace University, scholarships, all that, everything that my Caribbean mother wanted, except for the major. I was still a psych major, which was much to the chagrin of a lot of my family, like, psychology, ooh. But I was underage. I wasn't old enough to make those decisions on my own. I wasn't 18 yet. So I had no choice. And the minute I turned 18, I think I turned 18 in January. And by April, I dropped out of all my classes and applied to FAM for, I think, no, the semester prior. I applied to FAM. I got in. And I withdrew from all my classes behind my mother's back. Turned 18 and was like, okay, I'm going. But I selected engineering to appease her. Like, maybe that will soften the blow a little bit. Like, I'm going to be an engineer, girl. That's what you always wanted. And I that's how I got to FAMU. I had to do it under the cover of night and sneak my way in there and be prepared to move myself. And my mother told me, she's like, I'm not financially supporting you in this decision. She did help me move, and she was supportive in my move, but I knew she was really against it. But it literally was a decision that absolutely changed the trajectory of my life, and I am so deeply grateful, so grateful.
So though some of those moments you said where you, it kind of passed through, it like you felt that feeling, like it was sure, this is what I wanted to do. What were some of the experiences that you had at the FAMU campus that made you say, this is what I need to be doing with myself?
You know, it was the community. Like, my cousin Alyssa is ever since I was young, like before college was even a thought, she's always been an attractor, right? Like, she's always, people are drawn to her in the most significant ways. And I always admired that about her as your stereotypical shy child, right? Like, I just, I would try to cover myself and just like not want to exist in front of people. And she felt like the opposite. So when she got to FAM, she had this dope life. Like, there was an independence and a glow about her that I think that FAMU encourages, where you feel powerful in your space and you feel connected to other like-minded people in a really significant way that you can navigate through a very difficult life, mind you. It's not easy, but feeling connected to other people. So it was that, it was seeing her, like people that we met, friends that would come by, just very casual. It was nothing official or formal, but all these people, these Black people just coming in, and they were just so beautiful and educated and funny. They were so funny. I cracked up laughing the entire time. And I felt like, not envy, but a yearning. Like, I want to exist in this space. And a lot of my educational experience, because of the way education is set up in America, was with white people. And I just never got to feel myself. When I was funny, it always felt like borderline clown shit, right? Like, when I was attractive, it felt borderline fetish. It would just, it never felt real. And that was the first time I was able to witness it real. And the second thing was, Tallahassee had seasons, and there was something about being in that region and driving through the neighborhoods and seeing like the leaves changing. It was November, and it was just this really crisp, cool, it was like the perfect mix of like the South and the North that I needed. I don't know, that was part of it too.
So let's take it back a little bit. Let's travel back before FAMU, before college, before all of that. You had a pretty unique experience growing up as far as viewpoints in your household, right? So, and you talk about how important your FAMU experience was. Do you mind sharing with us a little bit of what was going on in your household as to why you had a yearning to be in an environment like this?
So it's funny because before we started this conversation, I was talking to my partner and I was telling him, like, I did another conversation earlier with another good friend of mine, and it went so well. And I was just like kind of chatting through it, and it feels natural, these conversations, because of the safe space and the people that I'm with. I love it. But there's always something about this topic that is particularly sensitive and vulnerable for me, because it's such a deep window into my growth. And not everybody gets to like see that, right? They see the end result, or the current result, I should say, not the end result. But taking them through that, it's very telling of my experience and some of my challenges. But it also tells a lot about my family, which I am deeply respectful and grateful to, no matter what. Like, I never want these conversations to be admonishing their experience, because that came from somewhere as well, and that's their story to tell. So I always feel a little anxious about this, but it is really important, and it's something that I have talked about before, and I genuinely enjoy talking about, because like you said, there are other people who have felt this way and who have had a similar shared experience with me. So the first thing when you say like my household, I think I hear my mother yelling, it may be New York out there, but it's Trinidad in here. Like, it's like you coming back into this Trini household. I don't care what the people told you about America out there, but in here, it's Trinidad, and we do things our way. Whether it's doing a weird column for math, and I'm like, this is not how my teacher was telling me how to do this. Girl, what is this? What is this from the old country? Like, they're not going to say, no, ma'am. Or me spelling color with a U, and people are like, girl, what? Like, what is happening? to trying to explain to my very Caribbean grandmother about the idea of Halloween, knocking on strangers' doors, asking them for things. Like, yeah. And then there was the messaging, the unspoken messaging, right? Where my grandmother is a conservative person in her nature overall. Mm-hmm. So she was conservative in Trinidad and conservative in America, but conservative mm-hmm. in America is very different as a Black person, right? Like it looks real different. Mm-hmm. And for them coming from, I wouldn't call Trinidad a homogenous space per se, but there's something about the offsetting where you don't have to be Black in Trinidad necessarily. Like you can navigate your life without ever identifying yourself as, oh, I'm a Black person, you know? There's right. so many other words, Dogla, Chinese, Indian, Negro. Like they use all these words to like describe people, darky, reds, all kinds of things.
Oh, so they called me Clear. The kids called me Clear. They were like, oh, the little Clear girl, the Clear lady.
More like broth, though.
But yeah, nigga, they called me bone. Jeez. They called me bone broth. I'm serious.
What?
I can't make it up. The clear one. It's the clear one.
I cannot deal with that.
Oh, one of my personal favorite Trinidadian nicknames was Tick Sauce. Like, I was like, oh, were me? Oh, you're talking to me?
What? Tick Sauce.
I like that spit between your teeth. Like, yeah. Right. Oh, I love it. So it was that messaging in the house where my grandmother, I remember like she'd watch not what was Fox News, but the news in general when I was really young, and she's like, these Black people, and she would talk about Black people, and I'd be there and be like, very confused. I didn't grow up in a house where they self-identified as Black, but then the minute I would walk out the door, they'd be like, hey, Black girl. And I'm like, who, me?
Right.
Oh, you can't be talking to me. I'm Trini. Like, because in my house, it's Trinidad. Like, I'm living in the sovereign
land.
That's
gotta be a mind screw right there.
Was a mind screw indeed.
That's so crazy, though, because when you think about it, though, and I as someone who is, you know, Black American, born and raised here, but sort of thinking about culture, like Black culture, globally, and then thinking about it like sort of if we want to think nationally or even regionally, there are differences. Mm-hmm. And so similarly, I was born and raised in New York in what was a very Southern home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It just happened to be in New York.
Right. Based in New York.
It was the physical house was in New York. But inside the home was very much Nashville, Tennessee.
Absolutely.
And so even we think about the way that that looks, what's fascinating to me is resonating, I guess, is how deeply steeped in anti-Blackness. We are all sort of like, when we think about it,
how
like anti-Blackness is just woven into
the world,
the Black
actually.
American right, but even in the, it's just so associated with the Black American experience in such a way that you know, it just is so fascinating to me that in conventionally Black spaces that are filled with Black people physically,
there is still reigns.
It is such a thing. And so given that upbringing and your desire to go to a place like FAM, you know, help us to know how FAMU was instrumental in sort of, you know,
navigating that confusion,
navigating this out of it. I can't even find the word.
Climbing out of it.
This dissonance, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I was, this is like a dissonance.
That's
right?
Crazy.
It's like, you know, this
you Black outside,
conflict.
But you're not Black in your house.
Right.
That's
like a conflict.
Yes, it was such a conflict. It really was. For some background, I will say what you're saying, Kia, is so real because with anti-Blackness, sometimes I think, especially for immigrants, anti-Blackness feels like survival. Sometimes it's people showing up to a country looking for the dream that they were sold because white people came to their country and told them about it. Mm-hmm. And then you find the people who look most like you being oppressed, and you immediately want to distance yourself. Like, well, I'm not one of them.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And then it becomes so deeply seated in the culture and the experience, like the American experience, in the worst of ways, that you don't even really realize when you're perpetuating it, and you're part of perpetuating it, and you're dragging your future generations into it as well. And on top of it, and again, I absolutely have the deepest respect for my family, but again, it's the messaging. It's unspoken messaging, where my grandmother had 7 children and only one had a child with a Black person, and that was my mom. She's the only one. All of my cousins, for better or for worse, whatever they identify as, are interracial in some way. Mm-hmm. Which is also, again, my experience as a child, my formative years was like, okay, you know, wanting my hair done a certain way. And they're like, oh, you can't do your hair like that, cousin, because your hair is different, you know, or or me knowing throughout my life that I am the darkest skinned cousin in my family. So even that, like, I know we joke, Jade and I joke all the time about like light skin dysmorphia, right? Like, where we just do not know. She, look at her face, look at her.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The dysmorphia. Because she actually does have, she asked if there is a melanin dysmorphia situation. Jade absolutely has that condition.
I'm sure it's clear. I'm a highly delusional person. It's fine.
Without, I like that you were the one to use the word clear.
Oh yeah, no, because no, that's what the children describe me, and it's the children. You know, children don't lie. So when, you know, the children are like, the clear one, I'm like, now wait a minute. Because I fight kids, man.
That is funny to me. Not the clear one.
The clear one.
Yeah, the clear one. Mm-hmm. Man.
But that is fascinating, though, because I do come from a very Black American household as well, a very Black American family. Even with everything else woven up in there, I still come from a culturally very Black American family, where it's, I don't know anybody who didn't grow up. Yes, I do. I know plenty of people, but I grew up with the, just like Kia, with we had Luther on a Saturday morning. They might have had a little more gospel in their house. My parents were heathens, but you know, we were listening to Anita, and we was listening to Marvin, and we was listening to Tribe. But we were playing music. We was cleaning. We were doing your culturally Black American things, right? Stereotypical. Yes. But when we think about it, we have to take ourselves out of our Black American experience and understand that it's not a monolith, right?
Absolutely.
Because when you're in this one place, you don't think about the people who don't identify as, but who families don't identify as Black.
Because
who, even kids who grow up around all white kids, and you're like, well, what's your problem? And it's like, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. This is different.
Yeah. But while you were listening to Luther and gospel and all those things and cleaning, we were cleaning on that day too, listening to Soca, right?
Like, I just believe it. Right?
That's why we're not
it's
a monolith.
It's like parallel lives happening in very different contexts and perspectives.
And I'm glad that you said that, Whitney, around, like, you know, and this is never, I'm glad that you acknowledge that this is not any sort of disrespect or, you know, shaming of your family, because I think we all have to contend with the fact that we've all been raised, literally brought up and socialized in a world that has been trained for centuries to oppose all things Black.
Yes, absolutely.
And like you said, for survival purposes. I mean, my grandfather, I mean, other people, old uncles and stuff, we used to say all the time in my house, everybody want to be Black, but don't nobody want to be Black.
Please. Child.
That's it.
And so, you know, it is interesting. I think we can make space to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. And it's not from a place of judgment, because folks were doing the best that they could. But it is sort of like, when we understand better, when we know better, and I think our generation having access to information in the way that we do, we are a lot better equipped to sort of call out and call attention to some of the systemic flaws.
Yes.
And this is what white supremacy is all designed to do, right?
That's what it's
right.
It fought against
that. Set, yes, they set us up so that we would have these sort of internal differences and conflicts and to be nitpicking about that kind of stuff so that we'll be distracted from fighting the white supremacists.
Right. And the worst part is that we wouldn't be able to recognize it. Like, I think the conflicts and the conversations are so important, and it always helped me be able to connect to the Black American experience and the like African countries, Nigerian, Ghanaian, Tanzanian, all of those experiences, South African. Like, there's so many experiences, but it's so pigeonholed into one, and they made sure to jam us in as much as they could to keep us in there and to feel like the battle that we're having in this one little trench is all it is. And it's not.
Right.
It's not. It doesn't speak to, oh, look what you're doing to our community. No, we're allowed to have conflict. We can. We can disagree, but our disagreement automatically equates the breakdown of our society and the breakdown of our connection. And that's not fair. That's not
fair. Difference is not seen as an opportunity, but as you know, like, but it is an opportunity. And it sounds like FAMU was really instrumental in sort of opening it up to all, all that the diaspora brings, right?
Okay. So we've been,
so talk us through
that.
No, please.
Arriving at FAMU, the crazy thing is, when I arrived, I was so disillusioned about my identity and so confused, so deeply confused, that I didn't know what I was perpetuating and what I was trying to break free of. Like, it was still very muddled. I didn't really understand it. And there was a lot of dissonance, a constant dissonance. I was so uncomfortable. My first year, I was so uncomfortable and so confused and so charmed by it all. Like, it was overwhelming. It was the blackest space I had ever occupied in my entire life. And I had been and lived on the island of Trinidad, and still was the blackest space I had ever occupied. I remember people would, like, there would be conversations like, oh, they were looking for you. And they're like, yeah, Whitney, the light-skinned girl with the gab. And I'm like, light-skinned girl, excuse you? Like, I'm brown. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, stop it. It was, where are you from? Or the conversations. And I would always push away, move back from my blackness. I'm like, I'm Trinidadian. And they're like, girl, that's not a race. I wish I could list off the people that schooled me.
I love us. Girl, what you talking about? Girl,
you can't check that off on nothing, girl. That ain't on the census.
Like,
girl, you sound crazy. What you saying?
Stop it. Hello, stop it. This is your intervention, Whitney. Hello.
Oh, man.
They didn't even know they were running an intervention on me. Like, my God, the amount of times I came up against some really uncomfortable confrontations. And it wasn't a conversation.
You were pushed.
Yes. Like, people were like, they were going to educate me by hook or by crook. You hear me?
Absolutely.
Those professors.
By any means, you're not leaving out of here dumb.
No,
I don't care.
No, thank you. You're not leaving here a tool for white supremacy. You're just not. I'm sorry. You paid your tuition. This is what we're going to do.
You better get yourself together.
Hello?
I'm sorry.
Hello?
You're not leaving out of here dumb. It's taking you.
You're not leaving out of here dumb.
No, man.
I don't care what you say.
No.
You're coming here with your foolishness. You won't leave out the same.
Before we're done with these 4 years, I'm showing you every John Singleton movie that was ever made. Every Hughes Brothers.
Let's not talk about movies.
So. I know.
We won't. Learn today. Today, you're going to learn. Okay?
Okay.
I can't shame you today for your lack of knowledge, because the people are hearing the experience as to why you didn't see The Color Purple until you were 35. So, it's fine.
But you know what I did watch on loop? The Sound of Music and Mary Poppins. You're not gonna get
same.
I love those movies
same.
Too.
Because, I mean, it was just this past week when Jade and I was singing How Do You Solve a Problem?
Okay.
Like,
Maria, hello.
Okay. And me and XD was singing Chim Chimini Chiroo, because I am the Black Mary Poppins. So that is absolutely fine.
A little balance never hurt anybody, but that was my problem. Like, all of my images
just
were
a little balance.
Excited. You feel me? FAMU, I entered in 2004, and by 2007, I was like fully in the natural phase. I was fully like other end of the spectrum, like, you know what happens, the pendulum, right? Like, where you got to find your equilibrium. But I swung hard, I swung fast, like, these white devils ain't about to get me. Like,
what were some of the experiences you had that that, well, outside of what you just talked about, but was there anything specific that you can pinpoint or think of that really helped? Because you were defensive initially, right? Which is a natural human reaction to be feeling attacked. What was it that helped you to kind of to ease out of that mode of feeling defensive and start understanding?
I think your blackness? That it was defensive, but it was also honestly really scared. Like you spend the entire time being an academic where people are like, Whitney's so smart. She's so like always academic, the intelligence and all that. And suddenly I'm being faced with something that I really genuinely knew nothing about, but that was at the core of my existence. And it was more so fear than anything else, which elicited some defensiveness, of course. But I was like, what do I do? And who are my adult? I don't have anybody to turn to about this. I can't talk to my mom and dad about it because I didn't feel like they were a safe space for it because they did not equip me with it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have those trusted people. And I ended up having my own tribe of these women, my God, who I still to this day, every year, pandemic aside, we have a little girls trip. We come together and it's my three girlfriends from college, Amanda, Patrice, and Ikeela. And they...
Patrice! My girl.
No, not that Patrice.
Oh, sorry. No, okay, I take it back.
Oh. Well, hey, Patrice.
I'm sorry. Hey, okay, Patrice. Sorry.
That Patrice is a mom as well. But this other Patrice. Patrice is like born and raised from Tallahassee, Florida. Okay. And
It
was such a girl. Yes. It was such a difference. Like my girl Amanda is from Monterey, California, and she had like this West Coast Cali experience. She's half or quarter Korean. Mm-hmm. And three quarters black, but black from Alabama, black, like they were Southern. So like, it was kimchi really and crawfish when we would all be together. Oh yeah,
a good time. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
ooh, a nice combo.
And yes, and then Ikeela from Atlanta, but she was an Army brat, so she was born I think in Korea. Maybe I'm not. I don't want to lie on her, but. She had this really black experience where her father's name is Ike and her sister's name is Ikeera and her name is Ikeela.
I love it. Woo! I love us.
I love us so much.
Okay. I love us.
It was this real like this collage of black women that I was just like, wow. Like, and it was a snapshot of what existed on FAMU's campus where, again, not a monolith in person, personified. Absolutely. Where I encountered, there were people skateboarding to class and the punks and the glam girls and of course the niggas, right? Like it's all of that.
Always. Okay. In every space. Right.
In every space. It was all this. It was but everybody in their glory. Everybody was honored. Everybody had a space. Like the guys with the dreads, like the stock dreads coming to class. Learning and participating in conversation and lectures, you know, or leading lectures. It was my first time being able to see us in every aspect that was not combated or judged, where you're not the respectability. It stripped a lot of the respectability from it. And that was so important for me because my family thrived on respectability. That's what I knew. If you speak a certain way, code switching, even the accents where my mother would be cursing me out. And another thing, if you feel you could be big and bad in my house. And then the phone rings and she's like, hello, good evening. And I'm like, but where was that rant, Trini? Excuse me? The proper accent.
Just all lived in the same house.
Just in different ways.
Hello. It was that though. It was constantly being told that this way was not the right way to be black. And suddenly I'm in a space where every way is the right way to be black. And I lived for every minute of it.
I love that the richness of the black experience is something that you are able to be immersed in at a HBCU. And I think that is one of the great treasures of these kinds of institutions, right? Because you're one person, but even someone who is Black American, you know, I regret not having had that experience to be sort of trained and nurtured and cultivated in a space that was unequivocally Black in every respect. Mm-hmm. To really challenge some of the ways that society socializes me to hate and dislike and stifle and suppress myself and my blackness in a place like FAMU, all of the differences and nuances about being black is what's celebrated.
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm.
And it's about embracing that. And so it really adds another layer onto the conversation about why we need to value and appreciate these institutions in the ways that we do.
Absolutely.
If people try to, like you said, people try to sort of relegate the HBCU experience to these small little things, but we need to have these kinds of conversations to really open up and help people to understand the wealth of things that are going on in the HBCU space.
Oh,
for
my
sure.
Gosh, for
and
sure.
I love that you didn't. And again, we've been talking about this, and it's not because we love the homecoming experience, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We love that. We love that as a culture, like all of us do. I'll be on the phone with my homegirl in Houston who lives down the block from TSU, and we'll be on the phone listening to the band. You can hear the band practicing. You know what I'm saying? Like, we love the homecoming experience. But I do love that in this very unique experience of your blackness and how you grew up and what even helped you to shift in your thinking, it wasn't that stereotypical what everybody knows about an HBCU. It was very nuanced, and I think that's beautiful.
I think the thing that I want to always honor the homecoming, because homecoming is
absolutely
a very significant space and time. But homecoming is the celebration of all the hard work that we go through on a daily basis.
Exactly.
It's a snapshot.
Say more about that. Say more about what.
Please.
So this is a question that I have, actually, because as someone who didn't go to HBCU, I wonder, is there like a homecoming course? Because I felt like if I were to come into the homecoming experience, I wouldn't even really know where to start. I recognize it's something that, you know, you just got to be there. I get that. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder, like, you know, the history behind it.
Yes.
As a literal, like, you know, as a central element of institutional culture there, are there ways that you guys are sort of introduced to it as freshmen?
Absolutely.
Okay, please talk us through. Help
it
us,
is help us. Such a indoctrination, like in the greatest of ways, of like the culture of the campus of an HBCU. Like FAMU, we have the set. We have Foothillier. We have there are these words that I can rattle off that any FAMU alum or current student could be like, oh my God, you know. We do know, but of course, I think that the honor and the grace and the importance of these celebrations and these moments are always through word of mouth, as, you know, typically we pass on
oral tradition.
Absolutely. So it was kind of like by witnessing, by seeing, like when you see FAMU alum or people's parents and grandparents who graduated from FAMU coming in droves, in caravans. They would put their dunks on the back of trailers and drive up from Miami with the rims and the systems and the rib trucks and the tailgating. Like, it was such an event that nobody even had to explain it to me. And I was able to connect to the idea of the celebration of a hard existence through carnival. And I told I told Jade, like, when we talk about FAMU and homecoming, I liken it to Trinidad and Carnival. No, Trinidad is not just about carnival, just like HBCUs are not just about homecoming, but it is a core part of the deserved moment of freeing up yourself, being completely, unequivocally, unapologetically yourself and Black and in that space and enjoying yourself because you work damn hard throughout the year. You go through so much, and this is our opportunity to come together in communion, in community, in a shared experience. And we have elders come, professors understand. There's just such an unspoken understanding about what homecoming represents that there is no course. You have to just physically be there.
What's one of your most memorable homecoming experiences?
I love it.
Right? You know somebody about to tell a story by their reaction.
I just felt like, I mean, we just went on a journey.
My God. You know what it was? I to keep it very cookie cutter and very cute, it was me having, again, a safe space to really connect to the people around me and understand what my role is with the people I've been navigating my education with, right? Where the parties, where it's the gatherings, it's the step shows, it's the fashion shows. Like, I did everything that year. Mm-hmm. And I was really able to see and find a deeper respect for, I would say, Black American culture as well, because mm-hmm. of course, as a Caribbean person, I don't think I was ever explicitly told this, but Caribbean culture and even like different African countries have such a dominant presence of tradition and culture that, and Black American culture is so co-opted so frequently by the space that they occupy, like that America is constantly snatching and grabbing and pulling and yanking at your culture that you can't even, it looks like they're trying to take their shit back. And you're like, no, actually, this is mine. This belongs to
me. And they
me.
Would have you to believe that we don't have culture.
Oh, God.
They would
right.
have
yes.
you to believe right. that they we would have, don't.
They've done so good at that that they've had us believing for a while yes. that exactly. we don't have culture.
Yes. It is mm-hmm. it is nonsensical. It was a homecoming. I'm pretty sure it was 2005, if I'm not mistaken. And I went to the games and, you know, at the time, love you, Fami, but we really only went for the band. So we would arrive before halftime and then right on out after. I'm sure the team is way better now, you know, I hope. But that Marching 100 though, like, yes, it was that. It was just a collection of these moments. But it was also the moments of riding around Tallahassee with my girlfriends, smoking cloves and talking about life.
Come on, cloves.
Okay, let me tell you how Whitney used to love a clove, honey.
I used to love
she
a
used
clove.
To love a clove, darling.
Oh my god.
I'd be like, are you smoking? What you? Oh, those beaties? She like cloves.
Cloves. I mean, there's such an undergraduate nostalgia in a clove. That's
yes.
so crazy.
A
shared
nasty experience.
We're all living the same life.
I feel comfortable enough to disclose that I smoked cloves for maybe about 3 weeks. Three. It was probably a total of 21 days I smoked cloves.
And I was like, wow,
this is so, this is so cool. They smell so good. Like, I was such a bird. And then I went to choir rehearsal and couldn't. I went to choir rehearsal and was like, something's not right. And then, I'm doing this.
Because they're like smoking sage smoke. Like, it's so
thick. Oh, and I said never again. That was my last. I said, oh, Lord, if you get me out of this, I promise. I won't do it ever again.
Let me admit right now that I used to smoke half a clove at a time. I wasn't able.
Because it was like glass.
Yeah, no.
Ripping through
unable.
Your chest.
I was unable.
You all know the type of person I am, and cloves yes. are still. I'm like, what is this? Fabuloso and incense? What is this?
Cloves claw its way down your throat in
wow.
the most aggressive wow. way. It was terrible. But yes, that was my experience. It was interwoven with those nights that were not homecoming. Yeah. Or nights that should have been like homecoming but weren't. Like, it was just such a mix of those experiences.
I like how you delicately ballerina danced around my question and didn't tell me nothing specific.
I
want to know a story because I know you got one.
I have to say, it wasn't homecoming. It was this event that we have called Be Out Day, and I'm not even gonna. It was my first Be Out Day, and a little known rapper named T-Pain was performing, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, vocally. I stand.
The music was going. It was just
a vocalist.
It was an experience, and it was a time when I was able to identify another part of my identity, where like being a
wonderful
now a Black woman, and I identify as being a Black American person, especially now that I have traveled internationally so extensively. Like, I am a Black American person. I want that representation. I want that. I demand it. It is very important to my identity. So, identifying as a Black American and then identifying as bisexual. So it was a really safe space to navigate all of that with safe people. And just, it just was a vibe. It was really just a vibe. And I know that's not probably not everybody's experience at these events and homecoming. And, but for me, homecoming, Biaute, these significant celebrations on campus were mm-hmm. moments where I felt most free, even more so than at Carnival in Trinidad. I have never mm-hmm. felt that free in my own home country. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's what FAMU homecoming and Biaute represented for me.
I love that. You've used this word freedom so many times, and it's really interesting. I love it. Mm-hmm. I think as you were talking earlier about sort of just being engulfed in this FAMU experience and just really relishing in all of the blackness, I never heard homecoming phrased as, you said something about it being like a celebration mm-hmm. and how it's like,
yes.
we work so hard to yeah. be black in America. Yeah. This is our time to be home and to just be free.
Yeah.
And I've never thought about it like that. You think about it in terms of like homecoming, people who were students there returning home, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. we didn't, I've never really, you know, that connotation of it being a celebration mm-hmm. of the fact that we have survived being
yeah.
black and unsafe
yes.
and all of these mm-hmm. other places
yes.
and you can come here and celebrate your black. That is something that I've never heard it phrased that way, but that, you know, helps me to really connect with your description of your experience in yeah. a really, in a new way.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think we deserve that. Like
yes.
we deserve, and I see it more so now than ever with like this newer generation. I had to reach out to this girl that I follow and really commend her on living in luxury, getting mm-hmm. what you deserve, doing what you deserve, and showing it to other people. Like, this is mine. This is what I did. This is what I get. So homecoming, yes, it is coming home for sure. And we need that. But we also mm-hmm. need to see what all this hard work pays off for.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Like, as a student, mm-hmm. I can't imagine not having homecoming. You're just kind of grinding through and trying to make it. Because let me tell you something. FAMU's campus is a very small part of what Tallahassee, Florida actually is. I'm and sure. I will not be disrespectful to that city, because I learned a lot there, and one of the most pivotal moments of my life occurred there, and I will always find an opportunity to go back there. But it was not easy. It was mm-hmm. not easy, and they made sure of it. There were literal train tracks that separate FAMU and FSU. Mm-hmm. It's so clear and so apparent. It's so blatant in your face, mm-hmm. even despite the excellence happening on that campus. Mm-hmm. Despite it, it's so wildly disrespectful. So those opportunities to celebrate and to come home and to have people from near and far come back and be like, look what's out there, y'all. This is what we did. Mm-hmm. Let's celebrate. Let's eat. Let's drink. Let's party. Let's dance. Let's show all of our things. Mm-hmm. Let's brag a little bit. Like, let's flaunt and flex a little bit. Let's go above our means a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's all of that, and it's
swipe
so
your
deserved.
Cards, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Swipe your cards.
Okay.
Get that financial aid check out. Come on.
Throw it in the bag.
Throw it in the bag.
Okay.
You are really presenting this in a very different way that I've not really heard the HBCU explained as, mm-hmm. because it seems so sacred. It's come off so sacred from you. Yeah. Now, it sounds like you've had this experience at FAMU, and then you had this very unique experience growing up, which yeah. somehow created this, like, beautiful balance. Where have you been since FAMU? Tell us, because you mentioned something about 6-7 countries. So walk us through a little bit of where you've been and, like, where that journey at FAMU took you to.
Yeah. I left FAMU in the most unceremonious way possible because life... Mm-hmm. Sally Mae was already banging at the door, and I was like, let me pack my stuff and get up out of here.
Yeah, she's aggressive.
She's
yeah.
a lot. Like, I'm tired. Yeah. I gotta get out of here. I ended up back in New York, which was an interesting choice. Mm-hmm. But New York City, of course, raised me, and that I felt like that's where I needed to go back to continue some of these lessons. And mm-hmm. when I tell you, New York City teaches you resilience, if nothing else.
Nothing
like
else.
There's nothing anybody in any corner of this planet could tell me that I did not have a very drunk person on the A train yell at me at 12 o'clock at night going through Brooklyn. Like, there's really nothing. Okay. You could try. I'd love to hear it.
I bet you ain't never screamed at a group of eight niggas on the train at 4 a.m. from Utica to Kingsbridge. But that's anyway, continue.
That is exactly it. I worked in child protection for the most part. Like, I'm thinking like foster care and foster care prevention. Mm-hmm. I did that for about 5 or 6 years. And then I ended up moving to my first country on my own. So the other countries before was with my family. And then I ended up moving to Doha, Qatar, because my cousin Akila was working there. And my family is like, again, an instrumental part in me being who I am. For whatever they are has absolutely impacted me in the best of ways, quite honestly, because it led me to where I am today. She was working there and she knew I like to travel. She was like, "Wit, they're paying for my housing, everything, transportation, just come through." And my mom worked for the airlines. She secured me a $400 ticket, round trip ticket to Doha, Qatar. And I went, and I, again, one of those moments where I was like washed with this like energy of like, oh my God. And it was because my cousin, again, an attracting person, was surrounded by Black women from Jamaica, the UK, the US, the South specifically, mothers, wives, single women, all women that I met that night at this party, some BBC anchors, educators, like just like an array of these fabulous, dope women, Black women that were not a monolith, that I couldn't place anywhere. And I was like, are y'all really out here thriving like this? And they're like, yes, girl, come join us. And please, some of them even strategically helped me get there. Mm-hmm. Carla, Kelly, like they went through, they walked me through it like I was their own. And that's how I ended up in my first international posting. And it was all she wrote after that. I remember on that trip, I hadn't even secured a job. I hadn't even really wrapped my mind around living abroad, never mind a GCC country in the Middle East. But I remember telling my friend at the time, I'm like, I'm moving here. I'm leaving. And they were like, girl, please stop it. And I was like, okay, watch. And since then, it's been Doha. And then I went to Dubai, the Netherlands, Germany. And I'm back in the Netherlands now. Mm-hmm. So.
I love that. I love that. I love your journey. I think that's such a unique journey. And I appreciate you coming and sharing that with us. And I think you brought it up earlier and we talked about it a little bit before, but I think hearing this experience, especially from somebody who grew up in a household where Black was not a monolith and might have had a similar HBCU experience where it helped to kind of change the trajectory of their lives. I'm sure they'll find great comfort in this conversation. Kia, do you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I'm really grateful. Again, like, you know, just echoing what Jay said, I think what you have added to this conversation about HBCUs really does enrich our understanding of the, you know, this sort of sector of higher education. And all of the many ways that these institutions stand as pillars in Black society and make contributions to American society in
overall,
general.
Absolutely.
And so I love, you know, how candidly you've spoken about, you know, all your HBCU experience. And like Jay said, I definitely feel like it will resonate with our listeners, whether they be folks who went to HBCUs or folks who didn't get an opportunity to go.
Yeah.
But as we're sort of trying to drum up and some excitement and momentum and getting people thinking about ways that we can sort of invest in these institutions in meaningful ways, I think what you have added to the conversation is undoubtedly impactful and makes
thank
a big
you.
Difference.
And
so
thank you for providing the platform.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining and actually rounding out our target bonus little stint here that we did. Thank you for rounding that out with such a beautiful and meaningful conversation. So I'm gonna leave with one more question and then I'll leave you alone.
No, you won't.
Because we've also, I'm not gonna leave you alone, but I'll leave you alone on here. So we've had very candid conversations and we've all had very candid conversations about our experiences here in America. We know we're not here to talk about all the political injustices and all the things that are going on because we all understand them to be true. And I know we also talk about some of the difficulties in the white motherland that you're in right now.
Girl.
But also some of the extreme benefits that we're lacking over here in this country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you encourage your child to leave there with some, you know, with some of that stability and that comfort to come here to, you know, where it can get a little difficult sometimes, but to attend an HBCU for that experience?
Absolutely. Like, I will always say, like, I will never stop singing FAMU's praises, partly because I owe them that, because I used to talk so much crap about them during financial aid time, where I was upset, if you don't run me my money.
Validation.
So I also need to offset that. There's a couple posts I have to go back and be like, ooh, did you say that about your...
I'm so sorry.
Oh, well, I was hungry. You know, I didn't eat that day.
You know, our youth and our...
Very
zealous.
And it's what Kia was saying earlier. Like, for me, freedom is such a vibe. It's such a key part of my life. Like, freedom and safety are things that I'm constantly trying to maintain, protect, establish in my life, no matter where I am. And I definitely speak a lot about that in conversation, in panels, podcasts, posts, all of it. Freedom and safety is so clutch and key, especially as a Black woman. And being able to lead with that is so important. So I know that my life now has taken a turn in a trajectory that I had never expected. My plan after leaving Dubai was to go to Ghana, quite honestly. Like, I had my school set up. I knew exactly where I was going, but George, you know, detoured me in the best ways. And I absolutely love that man. And he's totally worth it. But I do envision like a future and a family and a child, and I do encounter a lot of Black children here. And to me, and I might be speaking out of turn because I've only been in this country for 2.5 years, believe it or not, I think they need it even more than Black children who grow up in America. Because when they say go back to your country here, they mean it.
Yeah.
They mean it. There's no rebuttal. Like, we could say you first, white man.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
follow your lead, sir.
Right.
But here, they mean it. And they mean it with every core of their cream of wheat body. Like, they mean it. And I think that there's something very particular about having that experience and internalizing that as a child here. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage anybody, even white people.
Even me. Because I feel like it sounds like homecoming is something that we all deserve.
Hello?
Oh, we all deserve. Hello? No, absolutely.
And you're all welcome. Everybody is welcome.
Oh, I've been. I have invaded many a homecoming. Let's be clear. I think it probably hits different, especially listening to you speak about it so meaningfully when you're sitting there in that experience day in and day out, and then be able to have that joy, because you've earned that joy. You more than deserve that joy, right?
Yes. Kia, if you have not attended an HBCU homecoming, I fully recommend that you do. It better be FAMU. I won't judge. Whatever is most accessible. I will say that FAMU is absolutely a sacred space for me. You cannot say anything about that school, even if it's true. I will absolutely
watch your mouth.
We keep home things at home. It is a sacred space, and it is a space that I encourage people to partake in respectfully. Anybody of any background, any experience, I fully recommend that you partake in it, because you get such a beautiful and wonderful snapshot of what Black people have been trying to tell you since they arrived in varying spaces across the diaspora.
Ain't that it?
I love that.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm going to take you up on that. Mm-hmm. I have another friend who went to FAMU. He graduated. He's younger than us, so he's a baby. He was in the marching band, so ooh, all things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was all immersed. Mm-hmm.
He was, ooh, to the immersed. Side.
Yes.
But yes. So I just hearing about, I think Florida is an interesting place,
mm-hmm.
and so having the, and I have been sort of lightly introduced to homecoming situations, you know, but I haven't had a full-on experience.
Somebody invite Getting Grown to a homecoming. We want to come and do that. You know what I'm saying? Let us come in.
Let them bring the kitchen table.
Host something. You know what I'm saying? Let us come.
Bring the kitchen table down to your campus.
That's what I'm saying. It don't have to be Florida.
And while you're at it, I'll add a Trinidad carnival as well once it's back.
Oh, you know that's on the list. I have not done that. You know that's on the list.
It's a must. Do both.
I can't wait to play Mass.
I went to Trinidad my senior year in college. We went to Trinidad for our spring break, and we missed carnival maybe by like a week. By seconds. So we did like 4 days in Trinidad, 4 days in Tobago.
Yes. I've always wanted to go back.
It was so good. It was amazing.
You have to do both. I am proud of you. Thank you for doing both. And let me tell you about Tobagonians. They be like, oh, you only going to Trinidad. You don't know nothing about Tobago.
Whitney, anytime I mention, if I say Trinidad and Tobago, I'll say Trinidad is from Trinidad. But if I'm talking about Angostura, if I'm talking about anything, I'll say and Tobago. And they will message me. Thank you for adding in Tobago. We really appreciate it because everybody forgets.
Yeah, I'm
they
terrible.
They just think it's just Trinidad. And I'm like, okay, terrible. Girl, all right.
Something I'm working on in my language.
We will respect. We will respect.
We love
you. But
y'all.
Yes, thank you, Whitney. This has been amazing. We really appreciate you for coming and sharing your experience, your insight, your journey. It's been dope to have you in conversation.
Yes.
Especially such an important one about such an important thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So we really, really thank you. And thank you
and
guys.
Thank you
for
to Target.
Listening. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Black Beyond Measure actually highlighting HBCUs and HBCU students.
Yes.
And, you know, we have some HBCU students will be featured in the 2022 Black History Month campaign at Target, which is going to be dope. So we're
excited.
Design
challenge.
Can't wait to see that. The design challenge. So yeah, thank you to Target. Thank you to Whitney. Thank you, everybody. Thank you guys for listening. Jay, take the people out. Take them out.
All right.
How we always go out.
Well, first and foremost, it doesn't matter where you at. FAMU, Hampton, Howard University, TSU, Prairie View, wherever you at, you want to make sure that you're drinking your water.
Yes,
it's yours.
You also want to make sure when you're in all of those locations, especially so, to mind your business.
Yes.
Your business.
Yours and yours alone.
Key.
Yours and yours alone. And no matter what region you're in, whether it's humid, whether it's chilly, whether it's cold, whether it's hot and dry, you must always moisturize your skin.
Amen.
Why, everybody?
Because your black will crack if it's dry.
It will. Don't let them lie to you.
Okay, you can go get your lotion.
Don't believe the hype.
Down at the Target.
And get them elbows. Yes.
Or down at the campus store.
Get the elbows.
We'll see you all later.
Joints, fingers, toes.
Got a little space.
Love y'all.
Love you guys.
Bye-bye.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.